Good afternoon. This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. Today, a special broadcast of last Tuesday's Base 2 Lodge debate from the belly up. Opponents Ward Hauenstein and Maurice Emmer joined proponents Duane Romero and Mark Hunt at the belly up with Aspen Public Radio News Director Carolyn Zachariasen. We'll be hearing part one today and part two on Saturday on Cross Currents.
To start it off, a representative from each side will give a three-minute opening statement summarizing why we are here and how we got to this point. After that, I will ask them a series of questions and then open it up for discussion. The rules of engagement are answers and a one-minute for the other side to respond if necessary. And we invite our listening audience to join the discussion by sending us a tweet at Aspen Pub Radio or hashtag Base2Lodge. Or you can send us an email to apr@aspenpublicradio.org. So, the first question, let's talk about the elephant in the room, or the, put another way, the gorilla's cage on Main Street. It's the big box. Both sides are making different claims about what the developer's rights are on that property. Mark and Duane say it doesn't matter what goes in the box, it's the same size whether voters approve or shoot down the question. Maurice, in your October 8th letter to the editor, it says that that's not true and proponents are spreading, quote, a false urban legend. You say that either they don't understand the city's land use approval process or intentionally misleading the public. Some are arguing that you're misleading the public. So what do you believe the land use approval process is for this site if the lodge is shot down?
So Carolyn, was that a setup?
Always.
Okay, well, thank you, because I just happen to have a picture here. Works really well on radio.
It's a two-part question, too, Maurice, because the other thing I want to say is, what do you believe he can build there?
I'm going to show you right here, okay? God, I'm sorry. Can you hear me okay out there? So this is an overhead layout in proportion to the lot at the Conoco station. And the exterior edges of this piece of cardboard are the lot lines.
Can you explain that since we are on radio?
Well, it's right.
A face for radio.
It's rectangular. the black lines are the setback requirements under the zoning code. So we have a zoning code. It applies to this lot. The lot is zoned what's called mixed use. And under that zoning code is applied to this lot. It's required to build not closer to the lot line than where those black lines are. That's called the setback. Okay, it's 10 feet back from Main Street, from the lot line on Main Street. It's 5 feet on each side down to the alley, and it's 5 feet in the back. Now, if you run the math on this, that means that the square footage on which it is okay under the zoning code to build a building is just over 4,000 square feet out of a 5,900 square foot lot. If the building goes out to the lot line, the building footprint increases 41% from what is allowed under the zoning code. So the what I call urban legend, that it's okay to build an identical size building to what's proposed for Base 2, is totally inconsistent with the zoning rules, which say you can't build beyond those setback lines. Another building built on this lot could not be as big and have as big a footprint. It would be a 41% difference in the footprint.
In my book,
that's not identical.
Although HPC gave them the variance of no setbacks.
That's for this building, this project, this specific thing, not for just anything. And if this isn't built, they have to go back and apply for something else. And there's no guarantee that they would get that kind of approval on another project.
Duane or Mark, what do you think can be built there? You keep saying it's the same size box. What do you want to put it in?
I think it really can be the same size box. It did go through HPC. We went through HPC, we went through community development, we went through city council. And, you know, first of all, it's really looking at the lot in determining, you know, whether or not, you know, that makes sense. And, you know, you can make the argument, you know, based on the property next door being the Cortina, that is over the lot line. It's over the front lot line, it's over the rear lot line. And we've done that to, you know, with this building. We held the corner, we felt it was important. It's the first major intersection coming into town. The The other three corners of that intersection hold the corner. And we felt that was appropriate, as did HPC, as did City Council. You know, it really is the setbacks are not a variance. The only variance that we're talking about as it relates to this project really is the density, being the FAR.
That's subject to referendum one. I think that your opponents would disagree and say they also don't like the setbacks.
The setbacks, as were approved by the City Council, in essence, they applied an LP zone on top of the multiple use zone, and that site-specific project was granted zero setbacks. Those are variances because MU, multiple use, requires the setbacks that Maurice mentioned. They're 10 feet from Main Street, 5 feet on all sides, and at the alley.
As it stands now, what you have, how many feet off of Main Street and Monarch is your project? How many feet are we talking about from where we're walking?
Well, the corner, the hard corner, would be a zero setback. But the building is shaped, and there's a setback on every side of the building that we're proposing.
So what does it feel like when you're walking past it? I mean, how many feet do I have to walk?
Well, I think what people aren't realizing, too, is as it sits there today, it's a slab of concrete. It's literally one big driveway. There's no parkway. There's no trees. There's not a single blade of grass. There's nothing, keeping pedestrians from the building to the street. And I think it's also important to point out that the gas station, as it sits there today, does not meet the underlying zoning. The gas station, as it sits there today, in order for it to comply with the underlying zoning, would need more variances than base two to be built.
And maybe to come back to the original question, and by the way, we don't argue with what's been laid out by Maurice here. That's factually correct. That's a geometry that's called out in the mixed-use zone district in the definition of the dimensional requirements. That's understood. I think the takeaway that we're trying to ensure that the public understands is that the underlying zone district, that is the mixed-use zone district, when you apply those setbacks and the dimensional requirements for height, for width, and for the setbacks, essentially you're coming back to roughly the same size envelope that could, again, within the mixed-use zone district, yield a structure that's essentially the same as what's been approved, frankly, through the plan development. So the question that we've been trying to present to the community is, with that as a given, there's an essentially the same envelope, what do you want to occur inside the building? Do you want commercial, which is typically what is occurring in the mixed-use zone, or do you want lodging? And so that's what we're trying to say. We're not trying to say on the exact. We're not trying to say on the. We're not trying to say on the exact.
Yeah, let me clarify really quick.
Yeah.
So it would be the same building, except it'd be 10 feet further from Main Street and 5 feet further from the Cortina and 5 feet further from Monarch and 5 feet further from the alley.
In some cases, yes, and in some cases, no.
It would be 32 feet tall, so
yep.
That's 30, what it is.
32 is by special review within that zone district, 28 by right, or if you will, up to. Don't forget those words, up to.
And it's just a matter of either 6,000 square feet or 7,500 square feet, depending on whether you get a special review.
So it's still
a box.
That's right. Still a box. So figure it out. So essentially, something's going to occur there. I could speak for Mark on this point. One thing's pretty certain. The gas station is not going to be there forever. And no one's going to fall on their saber to protect the gas station. So with that being in mind, what would you like to occur there within the box?
Well, let me ask this question.
Carolyn, I think
there's been a lot of factual. You're talking about the approval process, Maurice. I want to know what you think.
I want to talk about the geometry because they've gotten off the geometry, which I think was your question. They've said they could build the same box. Now, has anyone in this room taken geometry? If you have a rectangle of a certain size, and you build it up to a certain height, it's going to have a volume. It's the base area times the height. That's the volume. I just showed you that the base area can't be as big as what they want to build. Now, how in the world of geometry you can get the same size box with a smaller base area under the rules of geometry is beyond me. But maybe somebody didn't take math. That's just the simple math of it. We have an architect here in the room. I know at least one who might be able to confirm that. It's just a fact, Carolyn. It can't be the same size box unless we're in a different universe.
And that's why we use the word approximate and essential. And in fact, that's what I
purposely... 41% difference.
Right. Yeah.
41% difference.
Not 41%.
That's pretty approximate.
Well,
but to be clear,
HPC still has the ability to grant
it's
those setbacks.
41% or it isn't? Which one is it?
It is 41%.
Why is it not, Dwayne?
Again, essentially, you can go up to that envelope of 32 feet. You can go for your 5 foot on the side. You can go for the 10 on the front. And if it turns out that there's 41% of land erosion from those setbacks in that volume, I doubt that. I doubt that very seriously.
I'll show you the numbers.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's fine. But the point, again, the word essentially and approximate gets it back in the same ballpark. I think the bigger argument that we should be focusing upon is not some exact science or exact geometry. We should be debating whether or not we should what uses occur within that structure.
Well, I think
41%
some people have issues with the density.
Or otherwise, what is the better use? And that was the debate, frankly, that was the debate at council. That was the debate at council, that was a debate at HPC, and that was a debate at P&Z. In other words, this was a planned development. That's a plan. That is a tool allowed for in the land use code to allow for some of these alteration, that's a great word for it, for negotiations to get community benefits in exchange for developer need.
Could we let that's Ward a get a word
right.
in?
I think that is
so polite. If we could let Ward get a word in.
Ballot issue 2A is about the project as approved by City Council in Ordinance 1 of 2015. And that ordinance has zero setbacks. It's right in the Exhibit A. There's zero setbacks. And the MU zoning requires the setbacks we're talking about. So you can't have the same box with different dimensions. It's just not possible.
Mark.
And we're not talking about what the use of this building is. We're talking about ballot issue 2A, which is to approve ordinance 1 of 2015, which is a lodge. Quote, affordable lodge with no guaranteed room rates.
Mark, what's your plan B?
A commercial building. I mean, I do think it does come down to the use. You know, we may not be talking about use right now, but to me, that's what it comes down to. We can talk about City Council. We could talk about Maurice, Ward, Dwayne, or Mark. But the reality is, you know, this vote is in the hands of the community. And to me, it's really as simple as that. Are we voting on putting an affordable lodge on that site, or are we putting in a commercial building? And the reality is I'm happy either way. I'm inspired by one, but I'm happy either way. But it would, if it's not a lodge, it'll be a commercial building.
And will it have setbacks?
It will have some setbacks, as does the current building designed.
So if you were to go in with a commercial building, like you did with the Gap building, which is called Aspen One, you would go to HPC, and if you're not asking for any variances, it stops at HPC, right?
Correct.
So if you're with no setbacks, or with setbacks?
Correct.
Okay.
And HPC still has a purview to grant these setbacks. I mean, they have the right to, you know, have the building shaped the way that it is now. Okay. They think it's appropriate.
Is there anything else you want to talk about as far as size, gentlemen?
Yeah, I'd like to point out that if any of the characteristics of a replacement building violates one of the variances, requires a variance that's covered by referendum one, that would have to go to a public vote. That's a change from the past, and this is not a referendum one vote that we're having, but there would have to be a referendum one vote if one of the covered variances were requested for a replacement building.
No debate.
Okay. Mark, I have a question for you. I think I've asked you this before. Are you a Gemini? Because you seem to change your mind a lot. You have, first, you didn't want to pay for affordable housing or city fees. Now you do. You didn't want to provide on-site parking. Now you do. You said you wouldn't build base one without base two. You didn't want to have a public vote. Here we are. You withdrew your withdrawal letter. So is this intentional? What are you trying to do?
It's not intentional. I've heard a lot about changing my mind. And listen, I don't think changing your mind's a bad thing. I think that, you know, when more information presents itself and you have an open mind, a lot of the changes that I made were really just listening to the concerns of the people in the community and making changes.
So that's one of the things I think that this community doesn't appreciate is the flip-flopping, and that's why they don't trust developers. What would you say to them? Trust me, because I'm going to keep changing my mind?
I do. I mean, look at the changes. I mean, I'm happy to go through all of the changes, but the reality is, you know, bring up the parking. I mean, I still believe sitting here today that the first proposal was the best one. I felt that there's excess capacity at the Rio Grande parking garage. I feel that that would have truly benefited everyone here in Aspen, the taxpayers. It's been subsidized since the day it was open, and there was pushback. In addition to that, we were bringing in 4 new WeCycle stations, you know, contributing, you know, for the people in the community, you know, at $50,000 apiece. I thought that was a benefit. You know, we got pushback on that. We immediately went to the St. Regis. We were getting pushback on that and continued, you know, to listen to the concerns and ultimately figured out a way with the architects, engineers, and the building department to put it on site.
Okay. And I know that Maurice or Ward would sit down there and say, we're not voting on an ordinance that has parking involved. So,
you just said it.
Right. You can't park on a piece of paper, right?
There are no on-site parking in the ordinance as approved by City Council that you will be voting for starting tomorrow when the ballots arrive in your mailbox, and you must vote and have them in by the 3rd of November.
Now, are you going to tell this community with a straight face that you did not know you could do parking underneath that site until just recently, after all the back and forth at the council chambers?
I certainly did not think that we could get that kind of parking in there. As it turns out right now, I think we're showing 29 parking stalls that can get in there. You know, there's some technology that came in with cars that allowed us to do that. And also the ability to go, you know, as deep as we can. You know, quite frankly, I didn't think that we could. I thought that they passed an ordinance, you know, allowing only a certain depth, but it only relates to residential.
Have you done a geological survey?
I have not.
So can you acknowledge that there could be a problem and that there is not a guarantee for on-site parking?
Well, I can say there's a guarantee for on-site parking, or if there's not, then the project doesn't go forward. I mean, you know, we're trying to obligate ourselves, you know, with the city. We've sent a letter. We wanted to actually, you know, change when we had this information presented to us. You know, but listen, I would find it very hard to believe that there's anything that could happen that would prevent us from being able to go down and put parking.
Here's another data point. There is, I believe, at least 2 underground storage tanks, and those just didn't come around through the, you know, act of God. They were actually dug down and installed and then backfilled. So at a minimum, there has been a previous earthwork and excavation project on the site that would play into it. Frankly, those 2 tanks, at a minimum 2 tanks, would have to be removed. So there's going to be, regardless, there's going to be a good deal of site excavation and some shoring that occurs. And yes, it is possible, to your point, for some geological concerns and perhaps some groundwater. But all of those are mitigated. Can be mitigated through engineering and shoring. Plenty of examples in town, frankly, and a fresh and ready one right there next to the Limelight.
Ward, you want to?
There are actually people pro-base too that have said to me that Mark has legally obligated himself to parking, underground parking on the base 2 lot. That's simply not the case. I spoke to a senior planner at the city of Aspen yesterday. They acknowledge that Mark has sent a letter, but it has not been submitted. There's nothing binding about it. So when you vote on ballot issue 2A, keep in mind that there is not even a submitted plan for underground parking.
And there's another aspect besides the parking. It relates to excavation. Dwayne mentioned that, of course, it's a gasoline station, so there's a toxic chemical issue with the site. Any gas station site requires cleanup. The city approval has the standard condition that the developer would not be able to begin construction until all the environmental cleanup has occurred and approvals have been obtained from all relevant government agencies. Nobody knows how much that would entail, how much time it would take, how much work it would entail, how much it would cost. I don't know whether Mark even has a ballpark estimate of how much it would cost to do that, or how much it would, if he could even know, because he hasn't done the study yet, or whether he could know how much it's going to cost to dig all that basement space he says he's going to dig. And yet he claims that he can get somebody to operate this as a so-called affordable lodge. Well, every $100,000, every $1 million, you have to sink in for more environmental, more excavation, increases the investment, is going to increase the revenues that the operator's got to get off that site. So I'm not even sure the business plan exists to support the alleged affordable lodging.
Getting off track a little bit. Dwayne, you got 30 seconds to respond, and we're moving on.
Statement one, good news. Don't have to have financial or any fiscal discipline as part of the land use review and analysis. I think we'd really collectively screw that up if that were to be the case. Number two is that the developer, in this case Mark, submitted a letter, and Ward refers to that, and the city has acknowledged it and received it. That's also a fact. And I'll be at the front of the list. I will be at the front of the line hanging Mark from the tallest tree if he decides that if we get this thing approved and he decides not to do parking, trust me, he's got me to deal with in addition to the city council. There's an obligation now is of the record. Now, clearly these guys are right. The city council still has to take some action after the election, but he's committed. And I tell you right now, it has to happen.
Ward, I have a question for you. It's regarding the campaign, and there's been a lot of claims at both sides. The opposition...
Go Cubbies!
The opposition maintains that Base 2 isn't providing enough employee housing. Your side repeatedly accounts that 12 full-time employees is what is needed at the lodge, and the developer should be required to provide that. But that's not what the city land use code requires. So why are you using that number?
Well, the mitigation is for 1.63 full-time employees. That's what the agreement is for. That's what's on the ballot. If you look at the MU multiple use, it's a 0.3 full-time employees per room. If you do the math on that, it's 11.1 full-time employees that would require mitigation. However, the city overlaid the lodging district on top of that, the LP district on top of that, and through a matrix of that overlay, that 11.1 shrinks down to 1.1. So do you think that 1.1 is a right number for employees? We know it's going to take at least 11 employees, probably more, to run that lodge, and Base 2 supplies employee mitigation for 1.63.
From what I understand, that's the city law, though. That's an LP overlay that they created to incentivize developers to create small lodges, and there's not as many amenities. It's not a big hotel where they're, you know, they've got people in the bathrooms and helping you brush your teeth, right? So
not on an affordable lodge.
So this has been applied to other lodges as well. It's not just this lodge.
It's a matrix of room size, and after Mark and I discussed this at the ACRA forum, I went and researched, and now I understand how they got to 1.1 from 11.1, and there were some credits, so it winds up at 1.63.
So, Mark, really basic question. How many employee housing units are you going to be providing for this lodge, and I guess for Base 1 also?
Well, listen, I mean, where this started from, I mean, you know, I look at it from Base 2, it is mitigating. I mean, the mitigation that I'm looking at was primarily for affordable lodging, because the economics of an affordable lodge are similar to that of affordable housing. The only difference is there's not a subsidy, there's not a program that subsidizes affordable lodging, which is why we probably haven't seen any in 40 years. But that being said, you know, we met with APSHA. I mean, it went to APSHA, it went to PNZ, it went to HPC, it went to City Council, obviously through community development, and this is what came out the other end, right? And this is, you know, so we are meeting the obligations of the underlying zoning.
So you're going to house 1.6 people?
Yeah, listen, I think that, you know, when we look at something in a vacuum, sometimes it's difficult to look at it, but that's a program that we believe in. That's a program that, quite frankly, we have contributed millions of dollars to and will continue to in this next wave. But there's someone we work very closely with, being Peter Fornell. And between the symbiotic relationship, if you will, we've been able to provide affordable housing, you know, both at by the Ice Garden, the ABC, Main Street, and with this next wave, we'll add 25 new affordable housing units on Park Avenue. So when you add that up, we can sit here and talk about the difference of, you know, 1.63 to 2.63. But the reality is, you know, collectively with Peter, we're actually providing close to 100. You know, on top of it, there's other properties that we have that we're making a lot smaller, and the actual credit that we're getting, you know, lessening the burden is minus 12 to 15 in some of the projects that we're looking at. We're not asking for credits. They're just going to zero, and we're moving forward with whatever we need on the positive front.
Ward, response?
The underlying zoning is different than what was applied to the plan development that was approved. So the only reason that 1.63 is a full-time employee housing mitigation is because the lodging protection district that's overlaid on top of that MU. If base two is defeated and you come back with a commercial application, it will have to adhere to the underlying zoning of multiple use without a lodging overlay, and there will be more employee housing mitigation.
And no parking.
Right. Correct. And, no parking. And there should be an incentive for lodging, and less so for a commercial building. I agree with that.
Given the perceived trust issue that you have with this community, why not just divulge right here and now who is behind the money? Who is controlling 232 East Main Street? Why is this such a difficult question to answer?
That's not difficult to answer. I do. I control all of the properties here in Aspen. I make all of the decisions for them. And I respect, do I have bankers? I do. Do I have investors? I do. Do I respect the fact that their privacy? You know, I will.
Well, can you at least say whether they approached you or you approached them when you came here and saw the real estate opportunities?
They're friends that it just kind of happened. I mean, no one really approached each other on it. It was just a relationship. You know, when someone cares, you know, people that care very much about Aspen.
They should let that be known, don't you think?
Someday maybe they will.
We hope so.
You've been listening to a special edition of Cross Currents from last Tuesday's debate on the Base 2 Lodge with Ward Hauenstein, Maurice Emmer, Duane Romero, and Mark Hunt, moderated by Carolyn Zachariasen. Join us Saturday at 3:30 for part 2. Good afternoon.